Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, dedicated to helping employers self-fund for over 35 years by providing data and insights to make informed decisions about health plans. The-Alliance.org. Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor.
That's me.
That's him. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
But we are here in reality.
We're real.
Yes.
In the flesh.
In the flesh.
I'm holding my arm, and it feels like a real arm, so I think we're here. We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails. This is a joyful take on living well. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about physical activity, organized sports, whether or not kids, does it make a difference? Does it make a difference, especially in childhood mental health? Some really good research from the British Journal of Sports Medicine. I think very important research. And then, long working hours may alter brain function. Maybe that's bad for you. You ever think about working long hours as being bad for you? Well, we know in the short run it can be bad, but is it bad in the long run? Some very important research from occupational and environmental medicine.
All right. And what's our special recipe?
Chowder. Chowder.
Chowder. I think that's what you say.
Chowder.
You mean chowder?
Chowder. Chowder. Oh, okay. You know, that's what they, you know, in Boston, they pronounce it chowder.
My son
lives in Boston. Alaskan chowder. In the Midwest, we call it chowder.
Chowder.
Out East, they call it chowder. In any case, it's made with fish. It's really good.
Sounds
it's a
good.
Wonderful recipe for any time of year.
All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Oh, first I want to say thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're most welcome. You're most welcome.
Yes, yes. I am a woman of 58 and a half, approaching 59 years old. And ever from when I was around 50, I began to have hot flash, which is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And
hot flashes can be awful, absolutely awful.
Yes, I stopped menstruation when I was 52.
Mm-hmm.
And then this particular issue has been with me all these years. And I'm very healthy, not overweight, exercise, no high blood pressure, cholesterol, or whatever. And all the parts of my body are still in my body. The hot flash is not like continuous. That's the part my provider, my doctor say, this is a unique case. It can come like randomly. And then when I'm on a medial progesterone for a while, maybe a couple of months,
So
I usually
tape
it down when the symptom is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just as good as new.
Right.
And then you never know, maybe after another half a year, it can come back again.
Right. So there are some interesting things. I recently did some research on this. So first of all, unfortunately, some women have hot flashes intermittently throughout their lives. I mean, it'll be 4 or 5 years, 10 years later, and they'll say, "Why am I getting these hot flashes? I haven't had them, you know, for 6 months or a year, and all of a sudden I have hot flashes." And the answer is, we don't have a lot of research on that, so we don't really know why that is, and we don't know why some women continue to have hot flashes and other women go through menopause and they don't have any hot flashes at all, or it's just something very minimal for a short period of time. We know that giving hormones, estrogen or estrogen progesterone combination, which is usually what we do with or with intermittent progesterone, that is the best drug for hot flashes. But we know that giving estrogen can have side effects. You know, there was the HERS study, HERS 1 and HERS 2, that seemed to show that there was an increased risk of cancer associated with that. And it turned out, although there may be an increased risk, and I say may, when you look back at the data and the data that's occurred after that, it was a little bit overblown. In other words, the risk was not as high as it appeared to be when the studies first came out. But nonetheless, still there are side effects about taking external estrogen. So it's a very individual thing. Black cohosh, which is sort of a natural remedy, works for some women but doesn't work for most women. Antidepressants actually seem to work well for some women for hot flashes, and there are studies that have been done for women who are not depressed but take these drugs because they seem to help hot flashes. But I don't think we really understand this very much at all. So when you take the progesterone, medroxyprogesterone, how long do you take it for? Do you wait for, in other words, you get hot flashes and then you take it for a period of time?
I have to use high dosage. And then first you try lower dosage when you can tell your body is not reacting yet. You add more. And then when you feel like you're good, and then I begin to taper it down, sometimes 10 days, and then until I don't take progesterone at all. So it can be several months, until you don't take anything.
Well, I think you're on the right stuff. I think I would continue doing that. If that were me, and I would do that based on good data. And progesterone is definitely safer than estrogen. You know, the two female hormones, I think progesterone is a much safer hormone. And over time, this may disappear. I mean, it doesn't mean you are going to have this forever.
I hope some so. Right. Because I thought I'm done. I haven't got it for 1 year.
That's right.
Thank
that's right.
you, doctor. You are so great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
Thanks for your call. You take care.
You take care. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. I'll just read this headline. Physical activity and organized sports participation may ward off childhood mental illness.
Yeah, very, very important. So when you were a kid, what sort of sports were you engaged in?
I did soccer. I did t-ball. I did tennis. I played basketball.
So you did a lot of different things. And what do you think about it? Do you think it made a difference in your life as a child or as an adult?
I felt pretty happy at the time. Yeah. I think probably did. I don't know.
I think you learn a lot of things. I've discussed this with my kids in teams. Sports, especially team sports, you learn a lot. You learn about cooperation.
Sure.
It's not just the win. It's the way you're doing things together. It's how you take the loss. I think a lot is going on. So this particular study came out of Sweden. Sweden, they have one insurance company. Guess what the name of it is?
Swedish Health.
That's right. Swedish Health. There's some name thereafter. But obviously the government. So they've got one, in Sweden, Sweden is a country, I don't know, 5.5-6 million people, something like that. But they can keep track of everyone that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And they can look at illness, mental illness, physical illness, keep track of things. And there was a study where they looked at about roughly 17,000 families, and they followed them over time. And they looked at organized sports at the age of 5, the age of 8, at the age of 11. And then at the age of 18, they went back and looked and said, which kids came in with problems, anxiety problems, depression problems, adjustment problems, all sorts of problems. And lo and behold, turned out the kids that engaged in sports were less likely to come in and have any kind of psychological problem. And it was more important for boys than in girls. In other words, the reduction in boys was quite significant. It was about a 30% reduction for boys who participated in sports than in girls. Now, there's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing. You know, that some kids don't engage in sports because they're predisposed to other issues that may affect their mental health later on. So it's, I don't think you can absolutely say that sports will reduce mental health, because it may be kids that engage in sports are mentally more able to take the trials and tribulations and problems in childhood and adulthood. But I think it's kind of important to think about it. So you've got how many children? 10 kids? Is that what you have?
Yeah, 10 children. No, I have two kids.
Can you imagine? It's a lot of children.
Son and daughter. Uh-huh. Both of them are playing sports. Yeah. Soccer.
How old are they?
They are 7 and 10 right uh-huh. now.
Uh-huh. You go to the games?
As many as I can get uh-huh. to. There's
how
a lot.
How many parents are on the cell phone at the games and not looking at the game?
I feel like maybe things have gotten better with that, but I mean, there's definitely some looking at the phone.
Looking at the phone instead of looking at the game.
It happens.
Right?
Yeah. You see that.
You got to be careful
it's
about
better
that,
than
right?
yelling at the refs, though. At least they're
yeah,
just on
the phone.
Yelling,
at they're
yelling
at the refs.
Yelling at someone
better
online.
Better yelling at the phone. But I mean, but first of all, you're at the game, so you're bonding with your child,
sure.
right? You're
oh,
at
yeah.
the game.
Yeah.
And they go, Dad, what do you think about it? Mom, what do you think about it? Or they're in the car and they either got to win or got a loss,
mm-hmm.
but you're with them on that journey, and that may be part of it,
right.
is the fact that you're with them sort of in a bonding situation. Because mm-hmm. when you're at dinner time, do you say, what happened at school today?
Yeah, and that's always met with just a brick wall of nothing. You know, just like they can't remember. Either they can't remember what happened
yeah,
or they don't care. They don't want to talk about it. It's
but
boring.
What about that game? Do they talk about it then?
Absolutely. They
See?
Remember, especially my son. He remembers every single minute of the game and when so-and-so did this and that, you know, and I'm like, I can't remember.
So
Dad, remember when he did this?
So it's kind of interesting.
No.
You interact more with your children at the game when you're talking about the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of an interaction back and forth than what happened in school today.
Mm-hmm.
So part of this whole thing with parenting, mental illness, kids' problems is how you interact with your kids. You develop relationships with them so they can tell you when there's a problem. And maybe that's part of the issue with kids in sports. And maybe that's why there's a reduction in mental health, at least in this particular study. Maybe it's the interaction that's
yeah.
going on, because it's really in depth when you're watching your kids doing something that they go, you rah-rah, made it. Or, you know, you're hugging them. Sorry you lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got another question for you.
Okay.
When the big game is there
yeah.
and the kids lost the game, okay, and you're going back, you know, in there, how long does it take them to recover from the loss in the game versus the parent?
Both my kids are pretty good about that. And I've always told them uh-huh. over the years, like, you're going to learn more from losing than winning.
Absolutely.
Which is true. They get over it pretty quickly.
They get over it pretty quickly.
I mean, we do
no,
too. We don't really
right.
care. But
that's
some
right.
parents,
yeah, but
I can tell.
Parents,
some parents.
Some parents, that's right. They think about it. They talk
yeah.
about it. Whereas the kids are gone on to something
yeah.
else. You know, they get over it.
Well, it's such a social thing for them, too, the sports. They're just
absolutely.
On to the next thing. They
so
just want to hang out with their friends.
So maybe that's part of this whole thing about organized sports may ward off childhood mental health issues, is because there are a whole bunch of things that are going on with organized sports with children. And that's why I think as a parent, it's important to encourage your kids to be in some sort of organized sports. And even if they don't want to be in one sport, try another.
It's interesting research. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Oklahoma.
Hey, thanks for the show. I'm 62. Been very healthy for the past 35 years. I was in the military. I do a lot of exercise. But I got a habit of eating Jay's potato chips. I've been eating Jay's potato chips, like, every little small packs, you know. And it hasn't really had any effect on me. But I'm cognizant of my health through your show.
Sure.
You point out a lot of great things. And thank you so much. So I just want to know, does exercise eliminate my concern for eating Jay's potato chips? Thank you.
Now, this question really speaks to me.
You eat Jay's potato chips?
Well, I don't know about Jay's, but I
yeah.
eat a lot of
yeah.
chips.
Uh-huh.
And I try
uh-huh.
to exercise a lot
uh-huh.
and stay in shape,
uh-huh.
but I just can't
uh-huh.
stop eating.
Eat
I
chips.
Love chips.
Yeah.
I have
yeah.
a lot of chips.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of chips.
We've talked about before,
chips.
Like the top of
That's
my
right.
fridge is where all the chips,
all the chips
sit.
Are? Why is
and
it
it's
on
just
the,
a shameful
Why
display.
Is it on the top of the fridge?
I wish it was hidden somewhere.
You
because
mean so the kids can't get to it?
Yeah, that's well, actually, it's funny. They don't care about chips as nearly as much as I do. Like,
So you just, hey, honey, I'm home. Let's pull down a bag of chips and
yeah.
you'll eat the chips.
I'll eat some chips.
Yeah. Well, you know, chips are basically fat with a carbohydrate skeleton
mm-hmm.
so you can get fat into your body and make you fat.
Well,
now, you are not fat, but basically it is a fat delivery system with
yeah.
salt.
They taste
it is
so
a
great,
sodium.
Though.
It is a sodium and fat delivery system on a carbohydrate skeleton. Yes. Well, first of all, there is a lot of fat in chips. By the way, There's less fat in pretzels than in chips. You can't compare them.
Oh, I eat those too. Pretzels. So I just do more pretzels?
Eat them.
Okay.
Eat them too. Pretzels are much healthier than chips. There's no comparison between pretzels and chips.
Okay.
Yeah, go to pretzels and toss the chip. You know,
okay.
It's a function of how many chips you're eating. You know, if you read a bag of chips, it's ridiculous. On the bag, it'll say, you know, it'll say one serving, 18 chips.
Right.
Well,
right.
Who but
Who's
people
counting
who have
chips?
OCD?
Right.
Actually count out, I'll have 18 chips,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be 110 calories. Nobody does that. Well, and then there's a big chip and a small chip.
Right, what's a
they
chip?
They don't differentiate
yeah.
that. It should be one quarter of a bag, half a bag, a full bag. That's
sure.
what they should do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to recommend to the federal government that they label that differently. And you know what they're going to say to me? Uh-huh. That's all. Pretzels are better than chips.
Okay.
And the
that's
answer
good
is
advice.
Working out really does make a difference. And it really is your overall diet together. So if you're eating chips, but otherwise you're doing well and you're having five servings of fruits and vegetables, which only half the country gets, that's going to be a plus. If you cut down bad fat and you're eating good fat, you know, which is fat that comes from salmon, other things like that, you know, that can make a difference. It's your overall diet that matters, not one thing in particular. And I know that the people who are against chips, the anti-chip police,
uh-oh.
Are going to be upset that I'm going to say a few chips are okay.
Now, this is interesting to me. Are the chip police, if they're on a motorcycle in California, are they called the chips?
I don't know, Carl. I can't answer that.
That's a chips joke.
I can't answer that.
No? Know. California
no,
Highway
some
Patrol,
some of them just
the chips?
Go right.
No?
They just right go over me. Sorry. Sorry, Carl.
Moving right along, as Tom Clark
moving
could say.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before the break, Zorba, as you know, not everybody listening out there agrees with you.
Yeah, shocking.
You knew that, yeah.
Shocking.
So let's
No, actually, I didn't.
You didn't know that?
No, I
Well,
thought,
now
I
you
thought
do. I just told you.
With me.
Let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing.
Okay, Zorba. This email is from Cynthia, who writes, Dr. Pastor, for many years I listened to you and enjoyed your radio show. I remember how you praised statins. I think you even said how they were so good that they should be in salt shakers. Did you
I
say
don't
that?
Think I said, no, I did not say
okay.
that. I did not say that. That was a letter
oh.
that somebody wrote and
okay.
said maybe they should be in salt
There's
shakers.
There's some conflation going on here. That's
I did
okay.
not say they should be in salt shakers.
All right.
No.
Cynthia says, so
no.
when
maybe
my
Maybe pepper shakers, but not salt,
salt.
Shakers.
Okay, right. Gotcha. Like you have to grind up the statin
right.
and then
That's
like
right.
a grinder.
You got it.
Okay, anyways, Cynthia says, so when my doctor put me on rosuvastatin 5 milligrams, I didn't give it a second thought. Well, they were quite the awful experience. I was on them 44 days, and it was the only med I was on. I started waking from a dead sleep with a racing heart, feelings of doom, intense anxiety, and suicidal ideation. Also, my childhood OCD of hair pulling was back with such a vengeance that I had to hold my arms down to keep from pulling out my eyelashes. Eventually, it was so bad that I was afraid to fall asleep. There were also muscle cramps every time of the day. Cynthia continues, I've since talked to many people with horrible side effects that have also quit taking them. I'm so dismayed that the public isn't told more about these side effects. I'm a psychiatric registered nurse, and many of my patients have these same symptoms, but no one has given any consideration to it being from a statin. They're pure poison, in my opinion. I just wanted to share this with you. It might help someone else. Thank you.
Well, first of all, they're not pure poison. They're
okay.
great drugs. And are there side effects? Every drug you take has side effects. Most common side effects, by the way, with statins are muscular cramps. But some people actually get nightmares on statins, which it sounds like she has. And it can key off if you've got another medical problem, such as OCD, that she said. It might be able to key that off. But any drug can actually do that. A lot of drugs, anyone with obsessive compulsive disorder can have it aggravated by any particular drug they take. So the idea that statins are poison, absolutely not. They are not poison, and they are responsible for a tremendous reduction in heart attacks and stroke in our society. But should everyone be on them? Absolutely not. Most people tolerate them. Not everyone does. Once again, when you go to the pharmacy, you get a whole list of effects. Mm-hmm. Side effects greater than 10%, side effects less than 5%. If you're concerned about any drug that you take, read what comes out of the pharmacy and then go and talk to the pharmacist.
Okay.
Because some of it is noise in the system. Anything less than 5%, maybe it's real, maybe it's not real. If it's above 10%, it's real. And if you're concerned about your drug, the pharmacist is the best person to talk to about it, as well as your doctor.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, more of your emails, and some voicemails. We'll also be cooking up a hearty Alaskan chowder. That sounds
delicious,
pretty good,
Zorba. Delicious.
All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. We're in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am sitting right across the table from Dr. Zorba Pastor.
That's me.
In the flesh.
In the flesh.
The legend.
The legend.
The icon.
Right.
And the legend right now is wearing a Packers baseball hat.
That's legend.
It says Super Bowl champs. What
That's
year was that?
Yeah, 1912.
Okay, 1912. Gotcha.
Right.
That's a really old hat. Looks good for being that old. 800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doc. But before we get back to the phones, let's do our recipe of the day. We're going to do a chowder recipe. This is not clam chowder. This is Alaskan chowder.
Yeah. Do you like chowder?
Yeah, I like it. I like chowder.
And there are many different ways to do chowder. I've been a love chowder. Was in Seattle recently, tried about three different kinds of clam chowder.
Mm.
One was good, two were not.
Oh, which ones were not good?
Well, I mean, just different companies.
I like to dwell on the negative. What were the bad chowders?
No, they just weren't good. They were too floury. They had too much flour in them.
Yeah.
Not enough fish in them. I mean, they were kind of like, they just weren't good.
Yeah.
But the best was called Ike's, and it was a really good chowder. It had a lot of seafood in it.
Yeah.
It tasted good. But chowder doesn't just have to be with clams. It's really with seafood. And chowder is great. A bunch of things that go into it, but once it's made, it's yours.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Alaskan chowder. Start out with 8 ounces of good bacon, wood smoked bacon or some other good bacon, but your favorite bacon. Think about the bacon you're going to put in your chowder because that's going to add a lot of flavor.
Okay.
And now you also want some sausage linked, okay? 6 to 8 ounces sausage linked. You can use a vegetarian sausage just like you could use a turkey bacon and pick out a sausage link that you will like. You know, the Beyond Meat sausages are really, really good.
Hmm.
Have you ever tried it?
I have not had those,
You got to try them.
All right.
They're really good.
All right.
A large onion.
All right. One large onion.
Half a cup of celery chopped.
Half a cup of celery.
Half a cup of carrots chopped.
Half a cup of carrots
chopped. If you have some corn cobs. If not, you go to the freezer and get some corn cobs.
Okay. Four of them. Four corn cobs.
That's right. You're going to take the corn off the corn cobs because you're going to put that in the chowder. Five garlic cloves. 2 cups of broth. Vegetable broth or chicken broth.
All right. 2 cups broth.
Half cup white wine.
All right, half a cup of white wine.
Some potatoes, 1.5 cup. I would try baby red potatoes because they're creamy.
1.5 cups potatoes.
Tablespoonful of Cajun seasoning if you want it hot.
1 big tea Cajun seasoning.
Some like it hot. Do you like it hot?
Oh, that's a song, isn't it? Or
no,
a,
it's
movie,
a movie?
Or a, okay, it's
Marilyn
something.
Monroe.
Okay.
Marilyn Monroe, baby,
it's a song
when
too,
I was
though,
a kid. Some I don't know if
Maybe
it's a
not.
Song, but it's Marilyn Monroe. Anyone of my age remember Marilyn Monroe, and I can't remember now. Oh, I can't remember who the comedian is. I can't quite get it out. But I can
Come on,
picture
Zorba.
It. It's
you
some
got
like
this.
It hot. They were trying to escape. They were mafia guys, and it was a whole series. They dress up like women, and Marilyn
Someone
Monroe
will
was
in
there.
Someone will chime
Someone
in.
Someone will tell us who's
Please
on
tell
there.
Us.
You can tell. I do not have the phone in front of
There's
me.
There's no Google in
hard
front
to
of
believe.
This doctor. No.
Hard to believe. A cup of cream.
A cup of cream.
Heavy cream if you have it. 10 to 15 medium shrimp shell deveined and tails removed.
All right. 10 to 15 shrimp.
Can of smoked clams.
Can of smoked clams.
6 ounces of smoked salmon.
6 ounces of smoked salmon.
Half a cup of fresh dill.
Half a cup of fresh dill.
Couple of lemons.
2 lemons.
Salt and pepper.
S&P.
In a bowl, mix the shrimp with the chopped garlic, some salt and the pepper. Set it aside. Then in a Dutch oven, cook the bacon. You want to get roughly about 2 tablespoonfuls of bacon fat in there. Remove the bacon out of there. Then add the diced celery and carrot. Cook with the onion for about 5 minutes. Meanwhile, dice the potatoes. Add 4 finely chopped garlic cloves. Cook for about a minute. Deglaze the pan with the wine. Scrape in all that good stuff from the bottom. Add in the broth, the Cajun seasoning, and then those potatoes you chopped up. Cook them for about 10 to 15 minutes. Now, if you've got a corn cob, you can put that in because that'll be great. It'll add some flavor, but you don't need to. But once the potatoes are tender, add the clams and shrimp. Very important to add them at the very end because they do not have to be cooked. So add the clams, the shrimp, the salmon, which has got to cook. It's got to be poached for about 5 to 7 minutes. The cream and the juice. You've got a wonderful thing.
That sounds
so basically, what you're doing is you're sauteing the veggies. You're then putting in the potatoes after the veggies are sauteed, and then you're making the broth. And let me tell you something. There's nothing like chowder to make the day fine, whether it's rainy or sunny or anything. Chowder is delicious, and we don't make enough of it. And if you want the recipe, guess where you can go. Go ahead, guess.
Maybe, I don't know. Tell
me. That's right. The World Wide Web. ZorbaPasture.org. That's ZorbaPasture.org. Of course, through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, let's go back to the phones and try to help out a caller from Benton, Kansas. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am just delighted.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Delighted. It's very nice. Well, we're delighted to have you.
Yeah.
We're delighted to have you. So how can we help you?
Well, I have been to the doctor for this problem, for the last 5 years, and I just can't seem to get resolved with this. And so the short version is in 2019, I was able to run a 10K, no problem.
Nice.
And today I can't hardly run around the track once without just gasping for air.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's just horrible.
Awful.
So I'm 69. Mm-hmm. I exercise I go to the Y 5 times a week. I'm, maybe a little overweight, 10 pounds or so.
But what happened? Did it happen suddenly or over time?
I think it's over time. And so what happened is, so in 2022, I went to the doctor and I said, man, I just got this nasal drip. I'm the only one in yoga that coughs, had a little cough when I'm laying down. I really figured out that something was going wrong is I went to a Garrison Keillor concert. Mm-hmm. He always has these sing-alongs. And so I'm singing along with this song and we are marching up and down stairs, long story. But all of a sudden these old ladies are passing me singing to their full throated and I can't hardly catch my breath. And I go, ooh, something's wrong.
You bet.
When
you can't catch your breath for something you normally can catch your breath with, that means there is something significantly wrong. Yeah. So what'd you do next?
Okay. So I went to the doctor and said, okay, this is what happened. I can't catch my breath. And that started a whole string of things over this last year and a half. He sent me to a pulmonologist who said I had mild COPD.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay. He wanted me to use a inhaler, but I said, well, I don't, when I'm running around the track, if I just slow down, I catch my breath and I'm fine. So anyway, I kind of declined that. I'm not really a big medicine girl. Also tried an allergist and they did a test of 60 things on me and I'm only allergic to mugworts. He said,
mugworts? Mugwort.
Yeah, so I don't know what that is even.
Mugwort. It sounds like something out of Harry.
That's what I was
Harry
thinking.
Potter.
Is that a Harry Potter?
Mugwort. Right. That's right. Mugwort. That's right. Don't read Harry Potter because you're allergic to it
and
you'll break out in hives. The mugworts. That's right.
Yes.
Mugworts. That's right.
Yeah. So she said, that was probably not an allergy kind of an issue. So then I went to an ENT CT of my head or my sinuses.
Oh, you did everything.
And went to him, said I have no sinus issues at all. I thought it was probably a sinus thing.
Yeah, not for shortness. Yeah, not for shortness of breath. I mean, postnasal drip,
said,
yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, right. He said mild deviated septum, probably not. If I fix it, I could fix it, but probably wouldn't really help you much.
So let's go back to one of the things. Yeah. So first of all, in your past, did you ever smoke at all?
Yeah, way back, 1980s, maybe, for 10 years.
But you did smoke for 10 years. Okay, a pack a day, half a pack a day.
How much? Probably 2 packs a day.
So 2 packs a day for 10 years. So you're a 20-pack, you're a 20-pack-year smoker. So that means something. And then you went and had pulmonary function tests, and you've got some element of COPD. The answer is to try the inhalers. That's the answer.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
There are a variety of different inhalers that the pulmonologist would recommend. So some of the inhalers reduce mucus. In other words, they reduce the mucus production that's going on within your lungs. Other the inhalers actually reduce the inflammation that is going on in the bronchial tree. And then other inhalers sort of open up the bronchial tree that may be spasming. There really are 3 different things. And there are a variety now of inhalers that use some or all of them together. And they really do make a difference. You got to call the pulmonologist, and you've got to try. And if one inhaler doesn't work, they will give you other inhalers that will work, because there's a little bit of art in this. There's not just an absolute. There's an art to this to see which inhaler will make a difference. And you've got to diagnosis. You don't have to search anymore. You need an inhaler. Even though you don't like to use an inhaler, that's okay.
Uh-huh.
Every time you put the inhaler in, you go, I got to use that inhaler. And then use it the next day. And you say the same thing. Now, let me explain something. I'm an old guy. And years ago, I'm an old guy. I don't, you know, now that I'm 77, I don't mind saying that. I'm an old guy. And years ago, I had some cholesterol issues, and my cardiologist I went to, I said, hey, wait a minute. I'm eating right. I'm doing everything right. I'm the right weight. I exercise. Why do I have a cholesterol problem? You know what he said to me? You have the genes of a cholesterol problem. I said, I don't want to take a cholesterol-lowering agent. He said, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll get a heart attack or a stroke soon. And you know what I did? Every day I took my statin to lower the cholesterol. I would say, I don't want to take any pills. But I've been doing it for so many years, I forgot that I even say that anymore. I just pop the pills in my mouth and I take them every day. And I'm really very healthy now because I take my pills. You need the inhaler. It is going to improve your life because you're going to be able to go back and do things.
Right.
I'm big into take it every day, swear at the inhaler, and you do it after. Swear at the inhaler after you use it.
You can swear at Zorba even if you want.
You can swear
every time
at me.
You take an
That's
inhaler.
Right. Zorba Caster, swear on your health. You got it. So.
All right. I might just take you up on that. Years, if I do.
Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
Okay. You take
care
now.
Appreciate your advice.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, let's take a listener email now. The following question came from Paula in Knoxville, Tennessee, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Carl. Thank you for your show. I love it." Good start, Paula. It seems like Paula says, "It seems like red light therapy is all the rage these days for anti-aging, acne, etc. Are there actual studies and verifiable evidence that prove it works? Or at least, does the benefit outweigh any risks?" And here's a red light joke for Carl. This is from Paula.
A red light joke.
A red light joke for me,
Carl.
She wrote.
Okay.
This is
Wait a minute. I should be
thrilled.
Reading the joke, right?
I'm thrilled. Okay.
You mean that somebody's writing you?
Paula wrote this for me, or she heard it and just wants to
let me hear the
transmit
joke.
It to me. Okay.
Let me hear the joke.
All right.
Go for it. Set it up.
I'll set it up.
For me.
All right.
Okay.
Why was the red light embarrassed?
I don't know why.
You'd turn red too if you had to change in the street.
Oh,
you know, like a traffic light.
This is like,
I think it's great, Paula. Thanks for that joke. I loved
it. Is this a 5-year-old?
No,
Paula, how old is Paula?
She didn't give her age, but she's got good taste in jokes. That's for sure.
She's got good taste in jokes.
That's a good one.
I'll have to try to my grandchildren and see. You'd be embarrassed too if you changed in the street. I'll have to try it with Bella.
Good.
It's kind of a 9-year-old. It's not a 9-year-old joke.
Yeah.
Please, go on.
Well,
go
no,
on,
that's
please.
The end of her email. So,
that's it?
Red light therapy. What do you think? She's asking about verifiable evidence research about red light. therapy?
Well, first of all, we know that certain sort of phototherapy worked for acne. Let me give a good example. Suntan lights worked beautifully for acne. They really worked very well for acne. There was only one problem. Skin cancer.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So we don't do it
anymore.
That's
UV, right?
They were suntan lights. They would tan you with UV. I had one in my house when I was a kid. We put it on, it turned blue, and you could, you know, you could pretend to have a tan. Well, they're like tanning booths. They're really, they're actually good for acne. Let me give another example of another type of phototherapy for acne that also works. X-rays. When I first was in medical school, they used something called soft X-rays for people with severe acne. They'd put them in a box, and they would send X-rays to them, and it would take care of their acne. There was only one problem. It caused thyroid cancer.
Okay.
So, I mean, you had really good skin until you had thyroid cancer, in which case you said, why did I get those X-rays?
Right.
So the answer is regular red lights, like incandescent red lights or LED red lights, I don't think they're going to do anything for your acne. But I think it came from that previous information that had to do with suntanning and then other forms of basically irradiation that work for the skin. Best thing for the skin are topical things such as benzoyl peroxide, and of course, Accutane for the very serious case of acne. And then there are some dermatologists do some phototherapy for very severe acne, and that can work too for acne and for psoriasis. But a red light that you put a bulb into your light bulb, I don't think it's going to work.
All right. Have a healthy living question for Zorba? He's always ready with an answer. Just post it on our face. It's not as good as Paula's joke at all. Just
not
post
all.
It on our Facebook page or send
You know
us-
what? The joke is embarrassing. Go ahead. That's right.
I get that. That's better. That's way better than my dumb pun. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
ZorbaWPR.org.
We'll have more of your calls coming up, more emails, more voicemails, and another healthy living topic to discuss. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your
on
Health.
On Your Health.
On Your Health.
On Your Health.
From PRX.
Yes.
Which is? The Public Radio
Exchange.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. I'm sitting here with Dr. Zorba Pastor.
That's
the
me.
One and only.
That is me.
That's him. He's right
that
there.
That is me.
He agrees.
The one and only.
He's got his plastic gavel in front of
That's
him.
Right.
I'm not sure why. We're
That's
not going to be doing Judge Zorba right now, but
That's
he
okay.
likes pounding
like
that
pounding
gavel.
I like pounding the gavel. That's right. Makes me feel really good.
That's right. Number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the calls, let's do another healthy living topic, Zorba. So we're talking about research about working long hours.
And it may actually alter brain structure.
Oh.
At least that's some preliminary study.
In a negative way, I assume.
Well, I don't know if it's negative or not negative. Oh. The real question is, you know, what does it do? So now that we've got MRI scan, functional MRI scans that actually look at blood flow and other things, we can see that the brain, which we think of as static, is not static.
Hmm.
There are certain things that increase the size and things that may decrease the size. And the other thing that's rather interesting is as you get older, your brain shrinks, but that doesn't mean that your ability to think about things decreases. In other words, shrinkage is not necessarily associated with lack of executive function or lack of memory. It just is. We don't really quite understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I remember reading about EEGs, electroencephalograms, which is what we do when we want to find out whether people have seizures. And the analogy was putting on an EEG is the same as putting your ear to a factory wall and trying to figure out what is being made in the factory.
That's a cool analogy.
You know, I mean, it's really there. So when we look at these functional MRIs, it's really kind of the same thing. You know, some area goes up, some area goes down, what happens? So this particular study was a regional study and looked at MRI scans that were carried out on 110 people that basically were, they were mostly clinicians. So they were doctors, nurses, other people or clinicians who worked excessive weekday hours, weekly hours rather. So often working 60 to 80 hours a week. And some were working standard hours. They weren't working 6 to 8 hours a week. And lo and behold, those who actually were working longer hours had different structural changes in their brain, in the frontal brain, and something called frontal gyrus, another area of the brain called the cingulus. There are different areas in the insula. These are areas of the brain that appear to change with working longer hours. And it also appeared that when they worked longer hours, those same people had trouble with memory tests. You can imagine, if you're working 8 hours a week, you're given a memory test, are you going to do as well?
There's a lot of brain fatigue there.
A lot of brain fatigue. Yeah. And what is brain fatigue? Do we really understand it? I mean, there really is cognitive fatigue that occurs, just like you have fatigue if you've stayed up with your kids for long hours and stuff.
Sure.
But it appears also there's some changes in brain function. Well, what does that mean overall? We know that people who work long hours have other issues involved. They may have psychosocial issues. They may have issues with the family. They may not be as socially adaptive because they're tired and they're working long hours. And I think it's one of the things that reminds us that really, as a body, it's important for us to get somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of sleep. And it means in bed. You may not be asleep that whole time, but it means lying in bed, shutting off your brain, and trying to relax your brain to allow it to recharge. There's something about recharging your brain during sleep that is critically important. And this study shows that long hours affects brain structure, which may, in the end, affect your life adversely.
Very interesting research. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Let's try to help out a caller right here in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Absolutely. How can we help you?
Well, in the past few years, I've suffered from a couple of episodes of BPPV.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's been, you know, it's positional vertigo, benign, but it's not benign if you have it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it can be debilitating.
Right, right. So tell me, when did it start?
Well, it started a few years ago, and I can't even tell you what led to it. It was quite sudden, and I've had it probably about 3 or 4 times since then.
Mm-hmm.
When I do have it, you know, I try to do the at-home positioning exercises.
Right.
And at times it's so bad I have to go into physical therapy.
Wow.
So my question is there anything that can be done to prevent this? I've done some research. I haven't been able to find anything.
Right. Well, let me tell you this. I suffer from it too. So I'm with you. Simpatico. I mean, I don't have it as bad as you have it. But it starts all of a sudden, and the theory is there is a little piece of the almost calcium, some sort of calcification, and we've got the semicircular canals, the canals in our head, in our ear, that decide what our position is of our brain and whether or not we are in the right position up and down. Remember when you were a kid and you would twirl around and you thought it was funny? Why don't we find it funny as adults is part of the question. We don't like that feeling at all. So the theory is that this little almost calcification is outside of the right canal, the correct canal where it should be. And then you do something called Epley's maneuver. Physical therapy does it, or you do it at home. And the idea is to move this piece of something that may be calcium out of the wrong canal into the right canal. And that's the theory. Now, whether or not this theory actually holds truth in terms of what it is, because I've done some research on it, it's a theory. We can actually see it. But generally, the Epley's maneuver will work. But so sometimes it's pretty bad, so you have to go into PT?
Yes, I would say almost every time it's gotten so bad that after a couple weeks, I have to go into PT, and I'm not able to work sometimes as well.
So have you tried any medications? There's no medication that's actually FDA approved for this, but have you tried antihistamines, you know, which we use for dizziness, Dramamine and other antihistamines, non-sedating antihistamines such as Allegra? Have they worked for you at all or helped?
I have not tried an antihistamine. And would you take that at the beginning of a symptom or just stay on it continuously?
Well, you know, if I had it as bad as you have it, I'd do a few things. First of all, as soon as it happens, I would start an Epley's maneuver. Now, I've got a question for you. When you do it at home, if you do it, how often do you actually do this maneuver. And by the way, we'll put this on our website so that people can actually look at it. There's some really good YouTube videos that show people how to actually do this at home. So what I would do if I had what you have, I'd do a few things. First of all, I would start on Epley's maneuver. That's basically what we know. You may have to go into physical therapy. I would take an antihistamine, even though there's no proof that they absolutely work. If I had it as bad as you have it, I would take that. And there's something else that I would actually consider. If you're getting it 3 or 4 times a year and it's this severe, I would consider taking a non-sedating antihistamine every day and see whether or not it cuts down on how often the benign positional vertigo happens, or if it decreases the severity so you can basically take care of it at home.
Great. And is there a brand that you would recommend for
I would go to a generic Zyrtec. And if you tolerate it, what I would do is say, hey, I don't know if these antihistamines work, but I'm going to take one every single day. And then maybe if I get the vertigo, it won't be as severe and I won't have to go into physical therapy and I can handle it at home. Once again, there's not great proof about this, but I would try everything since this is happening 2 to 3 times a year. When I get it, I only get it once every year or two, and I can do my Epley's maneuver at home. That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody knows why it starts. It can start with a head injury. It can start without a head injury. I don't think there's any good evidence. And why it happens to some people versus others, it just happens because of bad luck.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's take a listener email now. The following question came from a Wisconsin listener named Anne, who writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I've been listening for a long time, first on the radio and now on your podcast. And I have a question about something you said roughly 30 years ago." So good luck, Zorba.
30 right. years ago.
30, think that you're going to get this?
That was before podcast 30
right.
years ago.
That's true.
In fact, that was before electricity.
Oh,
we didn't have
electricity. Sure. I've heard
it was
that.
The very beginning of electricity 30 years ago and lights, the beginning of lights.
All right. So I got to get to this email.
Definitely the beginning of email.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
All right. Anne writes and continues. A caller called in and asked about aspartame. Or equal.
Oh, yes.
And you said, now you remember. And you said it was the
well,
most.
Well, I remember aspartame.
You know what it is.
Which was equal, was the name brand for aspartame.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you said it was the most studied product by the FDA ever.
Correct.
And that it was perfectly safe with no side effects.
That's right.
The
well,
one,
I did not
well,
say the word.
Let's finish email here. And then,
okay.
then you can, yeah, then
I
you can
argue
have
with
your,
it. Oh, okay.
You
okay.
can say your piece
okay.
here.
It's my words 30 years later. It's okay. Yeah.
All right. Anne continues. The one thing the FDA did not have at that time was data on 30 years worth of usage.
True.
So now that aspartame has been around for 30 plus years, what are your feelings about it? Thank you so much for all of your years of information.
So it's still recognized as generally accepted as safe. There's a term for it. Hmm. So they do have 30 years of data, or probably even more than 30 years of data, because it was out. It's been out for quite a long time. And basically, there are two amino acids linked together that taste sweet, and it's really pretty much the same. The real issue about aspartame, which is still the most widely used sweetener that we have available, is that it doesn't get people to lose weight. Hmm. In other words, you know, the thought was, as soon as you put in non-caloric sweetener into soft drinks, people will stop gaining weight. And the answer was exactly the opposite. You know, so that the consumption of sweetened soft drinks, which are using artificial sweetener, has increased dramatically. And so has weight in America in the last 30 years. So the question is, does aspartame and do other non-caloric sweeteners actually stimulate appetite?
Hmm.
Now, that is a very interesting question that has not been answered. So it might be you take something sweet and you don't have any calories, but that then makes you want to eat actual more calories later on, because diet sodas, you know, you have Coke, used to be called Diet Coke, but then it became Coke Zero because nobody wanted to diet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, diet was a bad word. Coke Zero, and of course, they use something different. They use sucralose, which is different in Coke Zero, but the reality reality is, it's still the same thing. Diet drinks do not get you to lose weight, and aspartame was mostly used in diet drinks. So I've changed a little bit. I think that it is generally considered safe from that point of view, but I think diet drinks are something we should avoid because it's highly industrialized food. Mm-hmm. So I think of that differently than I did 30 years ago, proving once again that even I can change after 30 years.
Even Zorba can change.
Even me. That's right. Thanks, Mom. I can even change after 30 years, but you're still in my brain.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Don't sugarcoat it. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, before we head out today, it's time again to hear from your favorite backseat drivers.
Ba-ba-da-ba-da-da!
The Grammar Police.
You know, it's definitely an earworm. There's no doubt about it.
Well, here's a new one, Zorba. This came from a very seldom heard from division of the Grammar Police. This is from the Animal Police.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we hear from them very often.
Well, their grammar is never very good.
No, so they're focused on other things survival,
that's right,
food,
the whole thing.
Like
that's right.
Shelter. Mm-hmm. All right. This is a voicemail from a listener in Oklahoma. And just to set it up really quickly, I think on a previous show, Zorba, we were talking about what sound does a badger make.
Oh, yes.
And I think you said, you couldn't even recall the sound of a badger.
Yeah.
So
right.
Let's hear this voicemail. This is from a listener in Oklahoma.
Go to YouTube, type in, "What does a badger sound like?" YouTube has a badger which makes sounds that there's no way I can duplicate that with my voice box anyway. Just thought I'd let you know. Thank you.
So thanks for the idea, Animal Police Officer.
Yeah,
I did exactly what he suggested.
I went to YouTube.
Uh-huh. I did badger. What does a badger sound like?
And
let's hear what that sounds like.
I have no idea what it sounds like. It's kind
there
of
it
scary.
It's kind of menacing,
definitely
isn't it?
Scary. It's well, they are menacing.
Yeah,
they are menacing.
I wouldn't mess with a badger.
You would not mess with an animal with that sound. You know, maybe they should put that in basketball games at the UW.
Yeah,
they should put that sound. You
put
know,
like
instead
a
of jump
beat
around
it or something.
Instead of jump around, it should be badger sound.
That's a good idea.
Let's hear it again. Can we hear it again?
Yeah, one more time, Brad.
One more time. Oh. Oh my God.
That's our mascot
there. That is our mascot. Wow, you know what? It's not a teddy bear mascot.
No.
It's not the teddy bears.
It's fierce.
It's definitely fierce. If you heard that sound, you would head for the hills.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't have a lot of hills in Wisconsin, but we have some hills.
Just bluffs.
Yes,
bluffs. Here and there. All right, do you want to join the ever-growing Grammar Police Force? Feel free to badger us by posting on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, should we do this again next week,
Absolutely.
Zorba?
Absolutely.
Why not? If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us
anytime. Anytime.
You beat me to it. You can leave us a question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen.
Ba-ba-da.
And our technical director is Brad Colbert.
Ba-ba-da.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
Ba-ba-da.
I was hoping for jazz there. Can you do a jazz sound effect instead?
No chance.
That's fine.
No chance.
Maybe a badger.
No chance.
For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.